I am going to be reading Deuteronomy 6, 1 to 9. Now this is the commandment, the statutes and the ordinances that the Lord your God charged me to teach you to observe in the land that you are about to cross into and occupy, so that you and your children and your children's children may fear the Lord your God all the days of your life, and keep his decrees and his communications that I am commanding you, so that your days may be long. Hear therefore, O Israel, and observe them diligently, so that it may go well with you, and so that you may multiply greatly in the land flowing with milk and honey, as the Lord, the God of your ancestors, has promised you. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children and talk about them when you are at home and when you are away, when you lie down and when you rise. Bind them as a sign on your hand. Fix them as an emblem on your forehead, and write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. Blessings to you, Randy.
Thank you. Thank you, Velma, for scripture for us this morning, for bringing us into a call to worship. And Leslie, great to have you back doing music, and thank you, Steve, too, for leading us and singing this morning. It's great to be gathered here together. It's great to have so many visitors here. Welcome to all of you. Just a little bit of introduction about who Whitmer Heights is. Our vision statement, mission statement, is figuring out together how to follow Jesus and make our community and the world a better place. We're figuring out lots of things. Sometimes just figuring out how to get up in the morning and wake up is enough to figure out sometimes for myself in a healthy way, with the coffee set on time. Sometimes just figuring out how to deal with the daily insecurities that we can face of, am I doing good enough? Am I really loved? Did I really do a good enough sermon 2 weeks ago? Can be some of the things that we have to figure out together. We're figuring out what it means to be loved by God and what it means to be a part of God's salvation story. We're figuring out what it means to forgive one another, to care for one another in sickness. We're figuring out what it means to offer hospitality and to receive hospitality. And in all of this, our goal is that we would learn how to follow Jesus. And hopefully, in the end of the day, our world and our community is a better place for it. And this morning, we're figuring out as well what it means to bless a child, a baby, and to introduce this little precious life to the congregation, its church family. We're figuring out what that looks like together. And here's the cool part. We're all a part of it, because you're all here this morning. So we have a beautiful text here in Deuteronomy that we are going to look at this morning a little bit. And I really think once we see a little bit of the context here of Moses writing, it just really expanded the significance of this text. And so here in Deuteronomy, many people think Deuteronomy is actually a huge sermon series of Moses. And it's a lot of his sermons that were then written down. And what's really cool, though, is that these sermons were most likely given right before Israel was about to pass in to the Promised Land. But they hadn't gotten there yet. For the past 40 years, they were walking through the desert, the wilderness wanderings, as some call it. And in those 40 years, there was an entire generation of Israelites that had seen what God had done for them by bringing them out of Egypt, by bringing them out of slavery and into the wilderness wanderings and the eventual Promised Land. But they weren't there yet. They hadn't crossed into the Promised Land yet when Moses was giving these sermons. Why is that significant? Because Moses is talking to the generation that's about to pass in. It's the children of the Israelites that came through Egypt. But these children that he's speaking to probably weren't the ones that actually saw what had happened in Egypt. They weren't the ones that saw all these amazing acts of God's faithfulness. And so the point of these sermons largely is to tell the story to this generation of who God is, of God's faithfulness, and to remind this generation that's going to be going in of what it means to follow Yahweh, God. The huge goal is to pass on the story of who God is and God's faithfulness and how they follow God into the Promised Land. And this text specifically is all about what I want to call holy habits. Holy habits. Habits just to get into the rhythm of doing all the time. And what's the goal of these holy habits? At the end of the day, it's that they would understand what it means to be the people of God, to love God with all of their hearts, soul, mind, and strength. And as Jesus will later add on in the gospel, to also love their neighbor as themselves. But these holy habits, habits that remind them every morning and every evening who they are in God's story. These commands, it says in chapter 6, these commands, decrees, and laws the Lord your God directed me to teach you, to observe in the land that you are crossing the Jordan to possess. Why? So that you, your children, and their children after them may fear the Lord your God as long as you live, by keeping all his decrees and commandments that I give you. Hear, Israel, and be careful to obey these commandments. And then it gets into one of what is considered probably the most famous words, if you were a Jew, that you would have remembered. It's called the Shema. And I remember in seminary, our Old Testament professor would always start off class by reciting the Shema. Hear, O Israel, and he would say it in Hebrew, which I'm not going to do this morning. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. And indeed, even Jews today recite the Shema up to 2 times a day. It is the heart of so much of who they are. And indeed, it's the heart and the core of so much of what we profess as Christians, to remember the story that we're a part of. And it just names it so clearly right here in such a succinct kind of way. What's the heart of this all? At the end of the day, it's love. To love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Now, it's important that we just think a little bit about what love means here, because it's so easy just to think of an emotion right away. And certainly, that probably is a small piece of it, the emotional understanding of what it means to love. But if we're going to look at the context here that Moses was in, it's not a disembodied love. It's a very embodied love. It's a love that comes in action. A love that can be demonstrated in our lives. For Israel, the significance of love here is that it's understood in the understanding of covenant. And especially if we think about treaties that may have been made between nations. If there is a covenant that's made, then there is a certain action that has to be embodied in order for that covenant to be lived out. It can't just be a kind of head knowledge or emotion. Yes, we love one another. But okay, but what's this going to actually mean now for how we live together? And so when God calls Israel to love the Lord their God with all their heart, soul, mind, and strength, it's an embodied love that will have to come out in the way that they live, in the way that they treat their neighbors and the refugee and the alien and the widow. It's a consistent theme that God calls Israel to. And we are still figuring out together what that means for us, of how we love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Why do I say holy habits? Well, the reason I'm calling it holy habits is because I'm just so struck by the rhythms and the patterns of how God calls us to remember this. How do we remember it so well? Well, we're told here that we are to impress them on our children, to talk about them when we sit at home, and when you walk along the road, when you lie down, and when you get up, morning prayers and evening prayers, to tie them as symbols on your hands and bind them on your foreheads, to write them on the door frames of your houses and on your gates. One of the things that I take away from this is that in the beginning, habits are kind of can be difficult to form. If you're trying to, for example, maybe you're trying to cook healthier and you're trying to eat more fresh vegetables. Well, in the first month, it just seems impossibly long and tedious to actually be intentional to get fresh vegetables when you're cooking. And it's like, how can I ever do this? It's too hard. It's too much time. But as you keep doing that habit over and over and over again, all of a sudden, it almost becomes a sort of second nature. Like you're not even thinking about it as much. Oh yeah, wow, I went to the market this morning and I got fresh vegetables and I'm cooking a good meal now. Because I've been doing it for 3 months, it's almost like that habit's a lot easier. And I wonder if that's the same thing here that God is trying to impress on us. That as you work on these daily habits of morning and evening, of talking about them with your children, when you lie down and when you get up, as you tie them as symbols on your hands, and as you write them on your door frames, this habit of loving God with all of who you are will become a sort of second nature. Now, I was trying to think of a parallel what this might mean for our lives today, and for some reason my mind just went to baseball because I love baseball, and I know that Corey loves baseball. He's a Tampa Bay Rays fan. And I just have to say this one thing quickly, Corey. 2008, it was a great World Series. The Phillies beat the Rays, but we won't need to talk about that too much. But I love baseball, and I see a lot of parallels here about habits. And if you're a pitcher, now if you're a Tampa Bay Rays pitcher, maybe you are Chris Archer, Matt Andres, Brad Boxberger. I am absolutely blown away by the amount of pitching and the habit of good form that it takes to be an excellent pitcher. Can we imagine just how many, the repetition of throwing that a pitcher goes through? So in a season, they might throw 35 games. In every game, they might throw 100 pitches. So right away there you have 3,500 pitches. And then you have all the warm-ups, and then you have all of the practice between games. And then you have how many pitches that they did just growing up as a kid and playing sports. Oh, and by the way, Corey's a state championship baseball player. So he knows all about the habits of baseball as well. But I was just thinking about the repetition and the habit of throwing over and over and over and over again and trying to have good form in this. And the second that a pitcher begins to just do one little thing differently in their form, like maybe they just drop their elbow just a centimeter, and they keep doing that over and over. In the beginning, it might not seem like a big deal. Oh, yeah, so my form's just a little bit off. But if that's a bad habit that they develop, and they keep doing it over and over and over again, it's going to become a sort of second nature, because they are so used to doing that repetition. And in the same way, if they have a little bit of bad form that has become a sort of second nature, they will be called out by the pitching coach, undoubtedly, that they will see something in their form that has to be fixed. Why do I think that that's significant? Because for a pitcher, they're not doing it alone. That in that repetition over and over and over and over again, they also have somebody that's watching them. That pitching coach is there, and they're going to call him out and say, your form's off. You got to fix that, because if you keep doing that, it's going to completely destroy your career. And the pitching coach isn't just saying, oh, just be aware of that in your head, and that's okay. If the pitcher only keeps at the head knowledge level, but doesn't actually try to fix the form and the bad habit, well, it was worthless. The whole point of a pitching coach or a hitting coach is that they can give them encouragement to see where they could change something a little bit. And then the pitcher or hitter actually embodies the change. Now, I suggest this morning that we are all the hitting coach and the pitching coach for one another. That's what we're doing for one another. The reality is we all have bad habits, and we all have some bad form every now and again that if we're not aware of, it's going to become second nature. And we need to be that pitching coach that can, with a lot of love and encouragement, say, I see something there, and I wonder if I can just, in grace, walk with you here. And then in the same way say, and what do you see in me? How can I become a more faithful follower of Jesus so that I can love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength? But let's be honest, that's a pretty vulnerable thing to do. It's not fun to look at the difficult habits. But I think that that's what Moses is calling these Israelites to. And it's what God is calling us to as well today. To be people of holy habits. Each day remembering the story that we're a part of. Each day to recite the Shema. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And as we do that over and over and over again, not just speaking those words, but embodying those words, we will become more formed into the likeness of Christ. And this morning, we are figuring out and we're embodying what it means to pass on this beautiful story of God's love and salvation to Corey and Becca's child, Ezra. And this text here tells us that it's important to pass the story on to children. Why is it important? Because Ezra represents the generation that will continue to follow, following God, following Jesus. And that Ezra isn't going to do that alone, but it takes parents, it takes an entire family, it takes an entire church family to help do that together, to be the hitting coach and the pitching coach for one another. And you know, the crazy thing is that Ezra, in 15 years, could be my hitting coach. Isn't that wild? Ezra could be my hitting coach, calling me out in my bad form. That's pretty cool. And I wouldn't deny that that could easily happen. Ezra will become a coach for us as well. And so this morning, we are going to celebrate the blessing of Ezra, the blessing of a child, and how he is a part of our community too, and that we will learn and grow from him as well.